There we go. Wow. All right. Well, Blog Talk Radio blew up on us tonight. Sorry about that, folks. I don't know what happened, but we're dialed in now. Whew, that was weird. Anyway, all right. So I guess everybody got to hear the full theme music tonight, and we should go ahead and get started here. I apologize. We're actually experimenting, and we're trying to get a slightly different setup going and a different format for the show. And I apologize. I don't know why the show blew up, but it blew up right as the show began, which, boy, that didn't help. All right. Anyway, to get started tonight, as always, the political rhetoric generator. Sorry, I'm just trying to get settled down from the panic of realizing this show had disconnected me. The political rhetoric generator for tonight is: my opponent is palling around with street gangs, Taliban militants, and Wall Street insiders. Always love the political rhetoric generator. Oh, so as I mentioned, we're trying to get a format change, and what we're going to try to do tonight, I'm going to do my thing for the first half an hour, and then we're going to invite you to call in during the second half hour. We've also got, we're adding a co-host, Dave Capano, to the show, and Dave will be joining me during the second half of the show, and we'll talk about, well, whatever we feel like talking about. So if you'd like to call in, you can do so at area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And we'll take your calls during the second half of the show. All right. Well, to get started, we have not a lot of news going on this week. Of course, the Obamacare individual mandate got pushed back to starting in 2016 now, I guess. That's not really a surprise. The Democrats are taking quite a beating on Obamacare, and it's turning out to be quite a mess. And here in Kentucky, I tried to get a hold of David Adams today. Unfortunately, I couldn't get a hold of him to get an update on his lawsuit and following the legislation to enable the governor to continue to run the exchange here in Kentucky. And I don't know where that stands. So I'm hoping that next week maybe we can even bring David on to speak about that and to give us an idea of where that all stands. But as people are getting more and more frustrated with the government and the Democrats and Republicans, the libertarians have been gaining traction. And this is nothing specifically new to this year. I would say since 2006 or so, the libertarians have been gaining traction. And some libertarians have chosen to work within the Republican Party, some within the Democratic Party, and then there's also the Libertarian Party. And we've had a handful of very close elections here in the last 6 months. We had the regular election for the governor of Virginia, in which the Democrat did prevail. There was a very low turnout. I believe the turnout was around 30%. And the Republicans blamed the Libertarian presence on the ballot for their loss. Fast forward to this past week, in the special election in Florida's 13th congressional district, the Republican won, and the Democrats are blaming the presence of the Libertarian candidate on the ballot for their loss. And I guess the point is that no matter what, people like to try to blame someone else for their loss. They try to blame someone else because certainly it's not their fault. Certainly there wasn't anything they could have done. The reality is, and having run a few races myself, including my own campaign, there are lots of things you look back in hindsight and say, boy, I could have done that better. Boy, I should have done that better. And those are the times when you should be introspective and looking at what you did wrong, what you can do better next time. What was it that made it so that the majority of voters or the plurality of voters didn't choose you? Now, because the Dems and Republicans, they tend to make the same mistakes over and over and over. And when they lose, they try to blame everyone but themselves. They've been pretty ugly to libertarian candidates in general, and even being able to abuse the court system to try to remove libertarians from the national discourse and from local and state discourse as well. It's done a number of ways. You have the ballot access restrictions right off the bat. Typically, it is much easier for a Republican or a Democrat to get on the ballot than it is for anyone else. And that right there kind of rigs the game in favor of Democrats and Republicans. The other funny part is some of these court cases, and thankfully we haven't seen too many of those here, these court cases that make no sense whatsoever. I just read today about a case in North Dakota where a Libertarian Party candidate was kicked off the ballot for a paperwork error. And it turns out that that same paperwork error was committed by both the Democratic and Republican Party candidates. And it was a lawsuit, and the lawsuit's been going for a while. And basically, it says that if the Libertarian wasn't able to run as a Libertarian, and he did end up running, he just had to then run back and get a petition filed to run as an independent instead. If the Libertarian couldn't run because of said paperwork error, then no candidate who made the same paperwork error should have been allowed to run. I think it makes logical sense. And the Democrats and Republicans made the same error. But to date, anyway, the courts have decided that, or at least to that point, the courts have decided the Democrat and Republican candidates were able to continue onward. Now, I don't have all the details on that race, but this is not unheard of. We saw this in 2008 in Texas, where state law very specifically said that candidates must be chosen by a certain date in order to be certified to be on the Texas ballot, and it includes the office of president. It just so turned out that both the Democrat and Republican conventions happened after that date. And so the problem was that technically none of those candidates should have been allowed to be on the ballot past that deadline. But a judge in Texas decided, it's all right. Forget the law. It's good enough. Who cares? Moving on. We're ignoring the law today. But at the same time, Libertarian candidates have been kicked off for similar things in the same state. It's an interesting thing to see the disparity between the treatment that Democrats and Republicans get and everyone else. And I made this statement when I was campaigning in 2011. There are many, many people out there who scream for a new party. I can't remember. I want to say it's 40% of Americans want a new party. And the question is, where is that new party? Well, I can give you an answer. It's not there because it's really hard to overcome the silly obstacles that have been put in the way by Democrats and Republicans. And in many ways, they rigged the game specifically to enhance their chances or to discourage anyone else from jumping into the race. If you go back through time and you look at Kentucky's gubernatorial races, the executive branch races, there are very, very few candidates who have ever run as anything but a Democrat or Republican in modern history, because it is difficult. Because, for instance, Democrats and Republicans only need two signatures to get on the ballot. And everyone else who might want to run, and they claim, well, that's your version of a primary. That's why you have to do that. That's your version of a primary. Well, first of all, that's false, because the process to petition is completely different than anything close to a primary. More importantly, though, it's not like a primary at all. It's just extra time and extra money that distracts the candidate from campaigning. It creates a significant disadvantage for the candidates to run as anything but a Democrat or Republican, and therefore creating an inherent advantage for Democrats and Republicans. And it's funny because that same reasoning, when applied in other situations, makes no sense at all. In Ohio right now, there is the Libertarian Party of Ohio is actually ballot qualified, and they are able to participate and do participate in Ohio's primary process. It's been that way for a number of years. I believe the first year was 2006. And essentially, they have a state sponsor. They participate in the state-sponsored primary. So it's Democrats, Republicans, and Libertarians. And I don't believe the Greens qualify. I think it's just those three. This year, the Libertarians are they're trying to kick the Libertarians off the ballot again for a paperwork error. And that paperwork error comes as part of the challenge comes as part of the primary process. They found someone who was a registered Libertarian to bring a challenge to each of the candidates. Now, certainly the challenge process is not to knock all of your candidates off the ballot. It's, is this candidate a legit Libertarian candidate or not? And in a competitive primary, it makes sense, right? It makes sense that Democrats or Republicans, you wouldn't want them putting a fake into the Libertarian primary. That's the purpose for the challenge process. But what's happened is not that at all. What would happen if the challenge process is successful is that there would be no Libertarians on the statewide ballot in 2014. Now, there's some shenanigans here. There's a bit of history. They tried to pass a law to knock the Libertarians off the ballot at the end of last year after the petitioning period had begun. They tried to file it as an emergency, and that failed. They tried one other thing. I can't remember what it was. It failed, too. It was kind of menial, whatever. So the third thing that's happened now is this challenge by someone who is registered as a Libertarian to all of the Libertarian candidates. Now, what's interesting about this is the actual legal process. There are three lawyers on behalf of the plaintiff in this case. Each of those lawyers is a very high-paid lawyer. The person involved, who is actually doing the suit, apparently filed for bankruptcy a couple of years ago. And they have on video the Ohio GOP chairman calling it our lawsuit, claiming that they are the ones behind it. And then when somebody corrects him and says, you mean the Libertarians that are challenging, oh, yeah, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, yeah, sure, that's what I meant. Uh-huh, yeah, sure. And so the latest news in that is that the federal courts, because once Ohio kicked them off the ballot, a federal lawsuit was fired up again, because we get to do that game every couple of years, which, of course, just drains resources and acts as a distraction for the party. Federal judge has now called the Ohio GOP chairman to testify in the case, presumably to ask about his role in the case. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens, because there's video evidence of him calling this our lawsuit, our lawsuit. And so I don't know how he's going to get out of that one, but it's going to be very interesting to follow. The point is that even if you are a Democrat or Republican, or if you're not a Libertarian, if you're some other party or an independent or whatever, this sort of action should anger you, because what's happening here is the law is being used to artificially limit your choices. And make no mistake, you read about modern, I guess I'll use progressivism for lack of a better term, but if you will, the nanny state. What they're trying to do now, they call it, in the one book I read, paternalistic libertarianism. And what that means is the government doesn't tell you what to do. Government just artificially limits your choices to one or two things. And the problem is, to two or three things. And that way there's still the image, you still think you have a choice. Because people do, rightfully, get upset when they don't have a choice, when they're told what to do. I mean, you look at what Obamacare is, right? A lot of people who are very upset about Obamacare and the individual mandate are people who already have insurance. And they're upset that they're being told to do something that they're doing anyway. So as a result, with the nanny state pro-population control crowd pushes is, well, you can choose from A or B, or maybe you get A, B, or C, but certainly you don't get more choices than that because the rest of these things haven't been approved. And they specifically speak of creating laws that promote certain government-approved choices and that discourage or punish non-approved choices. And everyone should be upset about that. Even if you agree on a particular issue, you should be very worried about the direction that that takes us, because what that inevitably will happen is that someday one of the things that you like to do will be decided against by some government bureaucrat who will decide that it is bad for you to do A, B, or C, and they're going to take those choices away from you. Or at a minimum, they might leave them as choices, but punish you for choosing them. You should be very upset about that. And you'll hear Democrats and Republicans justify this behavior because of the that we have today that, having a third choice or a fourth choice, that just messes up the ballot, messes up the math, and nobody wins with over 50%. Well, there are answers to that. We've talked about them on the show before. Go out to fairvote.org, where they specifically promote instant runoff voting. Very simple system. Anyone can get it. You simply rank your choices. If there are six people on the ballot, and you only like three, then you rank them. One, two, three, and leave the rest blank. Can you handle that? I can handle that. I'm pretty sure that my 10-year-old or 12-year-old can handle that. I'm pretty sure that a 5-year-old can handle that. You can make a list and decide what you like the best and what you definitely don't want. It's easy. So I guess the point is, candidates out there who are blaming libertarians or independents for their loss, it's your own campaign's fault. You, especially in these races where only 30% of the people turn out. I mean, come on now. If there's 30% turnout, then you've done something wrong. You didn't do enough to get out the vote. You didn't do enough to get your people to show up and do the work and win. That's all there is to it. Switching gears here for a few minutes before the break. Rand Paul gave a speech at CPAC, and a number of folks were real excited about that speech, and I've actually got a clip of that here, and I'm going to play it for you. Hang on just a second. Here's that clip.
Imagine a time when the White House is once again occupied by a friend of liberty. And you may think I'm talking about electing Republicans. I'm not. I'm talking about electing lovers of liberty. It isn't good enough to pick the lesser of two evils. We must elect men and women of principle, and conviction and action who will lead us back to greatness. There is a great and tumultuous battle underway for the future, not of the Republican Party, but the future of the entire country. The question is, will we be bold and proclaim our message with passion, or will we be sunshine patriots retreating under adverse fire? Will we be firm in our convictions, or will we cower, defeated, and meekly dilute our message?
So it sounds good, right? I mean, that's a pretty good little speech there, and I can't say I disagree with it. It is supposed to be about electing the best people. The problem is that choices are being artificially limited. And funny because, you know, in the most recent, the Florida, the special election in Florida for Florida's 13th congressional district, there were three candidates running. There were a Democrat, a Republican, and a Libertarian. And, you know, you could start that with walk into a bar, but there were three candidates in the race. And the Democrat and Republican candidates were both longtime government people. They've been involved in government. The Republican, if I remember correctly, had been a lobbyist. These are people who have been involved in the system for quite some time. And what was disheartening was to hear about the robocall Paul made, paid for by Karl Rove's PAC, to people who would be likely to vote for the Libertarian. I have that robocall here. You can listen to that.
Please listen to the following message from Senator Rand Paul on behalf of American Crossroads.
Hi, this is Senator Rand Paul calling to urge you to vote on Tuesday for David Jolly in the race for Congress. David believes in smaller government. He thinks it's the way to protect our liberty, and I agree. That's why I'm supporting him. He will go to Congress to ensure you, not the government, are making decisions for you and your family. Please remember to vote on Tuesday for David Jolly. Thank you.
Paid for by American Crossroads and not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee. 202-640-5367.
And perhaps the ironic part of that robocall is the timing, because that robocall was going out basically at the same time as he's giving a speech saying that politics don't matter, party doesn't matter, that it's the principles that matter. And the Libertarian candidate in that Florida 13th congressional district race was a good candidate. Now, was he a smooth operator? No, not really. I mean, he didn't have 20 years in bureaucracy. He didn't have 20 years as a lobbyist like his opponents did. But he was committed to principles, and in fact, he actually leaned a bit to the right, so he's kind of in line with where many of the Rand Paul people generally politically align themselves. But he made robocalls for the Republican, and it just kind of an interesting thing. I guess in the end, you know, it's no secret Rand Paul is trying to run for president. And under the current system, because we have the hammer locked dude on the Democrats and Republicans controlling everything, if you want to win now, if you want to win next year, if you want to win in the next 2 or 3 years, you're probably going to have to run as a Democrat or Republican. But the fight for liberty is not a short-term battle. It's not a, oh, well, we elected this person. We're done. We can all go home now. We're done. It's not a short-term battle. And political expediency is not good for the long-term liberty movement. It's not going to promote liberty over the long term just for political expediency. It's frustrating to me. That's all. That some don't get it. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll bring Dave on. There was a caller that wanted to talk, but they've dropped off. Hopefully they'll call back in. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be back here in just a few minutes.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
All right, folks, we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters radio network. And if you'd like to call in, the number here is area code 858-683-1366. 1-800-259-2626. And with no further ado, we're going to bring our co-host on. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Hi, everybody.
All right. Well, I appreciate you joining in here. So I guess what are your thoughts on the first half of the show, or what are you thinking?
Well, there are a lot of Liberty folks that think that the right strategy is to kind of infiltrate one party or the other, whether that be the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. That's not really my view or, you know, my way or my thinking. I think you wind up getting involved in a lot of side battles and side disputes and whatnot that really don't add anything to the American people, to be perfectly honest. And I think the first half of the show is a testament to that.
I guess what's frustrating to me are the number of people that do get caught up in those side battles. I have a lot of friends that are pushing for Matt Bevin, and it's nothing against Matt Bevin at all. I think that given the choice between him and Mitch McConnell, it's kind of a no-brainer. But I don't know, and maybe it's just that I haven't heard it, maybe the message isn't getting out there, but, you know, following the radio ads, it seems to be a fight over corruption. It seems to be a fight over who's lying. It doesn't seem to be an issue-based campaign. And certainly you can go down the route of bashing Obamacare. That's easy to do. And certainly you can go down the route of bashing bailouts. That's even easier to do. But I don't know. It seems like a lot of people have gotten distracted, as you said, off the message of liberty and more about individual personalities.
Yep, I would agree with that. With Rand Paul specifically, I've had conversations with several people, Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, and Independents. And in regards to Rand, the thing that I hear mostly from Republicans is they're not real sure where he's going. They see him as a little bit frightening, and they say that he's not a Republican, he's a Libertarian, which I find a little bit funny, because when I talk to Libertarians and Independents, they don't tend to see Rand that way. They see him as a Republican. So he's just kind of stuck in the middle, I think. But he's got his own way and his own views, and hey, that's cool.
Yeah, you know, and I don't want to make this all about Rand Paul, but one of the things that's interesting, if you I've got a kind of an interesting thing here about the breakdown of the Republican Party and what factions are strong in which areas and whatnot. And, it's interesting because counted amongst the Republican factions is the Libertarian faction. Now, they say that 7% of Republicans are Libertarians. And other polls say that about 12% of Americans are Libertarians, which I guess would give some credence to the idea that Libertarians would tend more towards Republicans than Democrats. But I think that is more of a candidate-by-candidate basis. But it is interesting to see, the same thing shows that 10% of the Republican Party is Tea Party. And those are both groups that the core of the Republican Party, the establishment, if you will, kind of reject both of those groups. And, we've seen a number of stories where the GOP power base, the establishment, the National Chamber of Commerce, have specifically sought out to attack the Tea Party and Libertarian candidates and groups.
Yeah. I think as far as the factions go, there are really two main factions that I see, and there's been a lot of work done by both the D's and the R's to kind of change the message and affect, where the groups, started from and, who they are now, and they're redefining them. But, of course, those two groups are the Tea Party and the Occupy movement. The thing that I find ironic about those factions is that they're both saying exactly the same thing.
Oh, yeah. You're 100% right. And that was and you and I have talked about this privately. I think we've talked about it on the show before. I know we talked about it on one of the other shows on the network, the Ed Springson show, that, you know, the Occupy people and the Tea Party people, well, I would say almost all people agree that bailouts are bad, that we should not have bailed the banks out, that we should have let the banks that were engaging in bad activities fail. And I think the problem with it is then it justified bailing out auto companies. It justifies bailing out this and bailing out that. And the reality is that that's all done at the expense of the people who are doing the right thing, the small community banks, the small startup companies that are trying to compete in the auto market. These are things that are all hurting the long-term economics of the country, because people, it discourages people from even trying. It discourages small business owners from trying to get ahead, because in the end, the big guys have certain advantages by being big. The little guys have advantages by being little. But if you're going to take away the advantages that the little guys have and take away the disadvantages that the big guys have and make it so they only have advantages, then it becomes very hard to compete. And I really wish that the public had stayed focused on getting rid of the bailout mentality and specifically demanding legislation that prevented a bailout from happening in the future.
I would agree with that. I think the only way that they're going to get the people's support, you know, by doing that is if they kind of, you know, go both sides. You know, you're saying that the Republican states need to get rid of the bailout mentality. Well, I think that the American people would believe that, and they would get behind it if they simultaneously got rid of the military complex mentality as well.
And I think that that's another thing, that more and more people are getting behind. More and more people are questioning, why do we have all these military bases? Why do we spend all this money in other countries while our infrastructure here in America crumbles? And whether you agree the government has a role in that infrastructure or not, we certainly all can agree that the money is better spent in America here rather than overseas, rebuilding some other country while, you know, we here in Kentucky even have the Brent Spence Bridge and the Louisville Bridges project and a number of other various projects around the state that are underfunded, and they want to toll those projects because the money that should be being used for that infrastructure is being used to build the infrastructure of other countries. I just think that that's something that everyone would agree that, if nothing else, we shouldn't be spending that money in other countries.
Yep. I don't really have anything to add to that. You hit it right on.
So, I don't know. It frustrates me to no end that people are easily divided by wedge issues. You know, and there are several wedge issues that are out there, several key wedge issues. Abortion is always the number one, right? And the reality is that, especially at a state and local level, that's not something that's going to get resolved at a state or local level. That was a Supreme Court decision, and it's going to take either another Supreme Court to overturn that decision, or it will take a constitutional amendment to undo it, one or the other. And in either case, until it gets time for the states to ratify the yet-to-pass constitutional amendment, there's really nothing states can do at all, and certainly at the county and local level, there's nothing they can do. You know, there's lots of these little wedge issues that get driven between groups that, you know, if they would get past the wedge issues, we could actually accomplish some very, very good things.
Agreed. It's the, you know, the ancient philosophy of divide and conquer is being used and utilized, and the only way that that's going to change is for individual people to wake up to exactly what's happening and live by principles when they're, you know, engaging in civil discourse, with other people, especially when it comes to politics and those wedge issues, you know, and put principles above their values, you know, to say, okay, well, this is what I believe, this is what you believe, you know, it's different, but at the end of the day, we're paying attention to something more important than what you value or what I value. I respect your opinion, you respect my opinion. Let's move on.
Yeah, and that, well, that's always kind of the interesting thing about being in the position that I'm in. You know, there's a lot of that where I've worked with different groups on different issues that I disagree with them on some issues. The funny thing is oftentimes I don't disagree with the stated goal. I just vehemently oppose the methodology by which they're trying to achieve it. And you just kind of say, listen, you know, we're just going to have to agree to disagree here. There's nothing else you can do. And rather than make it personal, you just move on and work together on the things that you can work together on. And there are certainly, as I said, the bailouts are a great example of one that I think probably 90% plus of Americans, I haven't seen any polls lately, but the majority of Americans by far have to agree that bailouts of any company are a bad idea. You're just giving money away and rewarding bad behavior. Who's for rewarding bad behavior? Raise your hand. I mean, that's a really good place where all sides, all factions could come together and actually achieve something that would really help everyday Americans.
I would agree. Ken, what do you think about reaching out to our listeners here and inviting some civil discourse?
No,
pick your
favorite
wedge issue and call in.
Well, anybody can call in, and the number here is 858-683-1326. While we're kind of waiting for someone else to call in, the one thing I did have that I didn't get to in the first half hour was this legislation, and I don't know if you saw this, that the Republican-controlled House passed legislation on Thursday that it basically is trying to force Obama to enforce all the laws. And, of course, the big headline that I saw on this was, oh, my gosh, they're trying to force Obama to crack down on the states that have legalized marijuana in any form. But it goes a little further than that. It goes to all the laws that Obama is either choosing not to enforce or whatever. And I think it's kind of funny because the reality is this is kind of their half-hearted measure that they're afraid to impeach him because of the whole Bill Clinton experience and because of his race, which is kind of sad, but it's true. They're afraid to impeach Obama. And so they've just passed this law that says, hey, you have to enforce the laws. And I'm just curious to see what your thought is or if you'd heard about this law.
I did. I heard about it, and I pretty much just ignored it and moved on because that's kind of how important I think it is. You know, my thoughts about that, you know, are – regardless of what I think about the current president of the United States, which I'm not going to get into right now in an attempt to keep the discourse civil, the president of the United States is supposed to preside over the country, not really enforce laws, and definitely not make laws. Now, there could be arguments made that, you know, he's attempted to this, that, whatever, you know, and we can, you know, argue about that until the day is long, but you know, the point is, he's the president. He's supposed to preside over the government. That's his job.
Yeah, well, and I would say, you know, actually, you mentioned one thing I had to disagree with, and you said that it's not his job to decide which laws to execute. And the reality is, it actually is. If you go back to the original constitutional debates, the role of the president is that he is supposed to be the one that actually is responsible for enforcing the laws that Congress passes, and that is true. However, the other side of that is that he is also supposed to, the president is supposed to work as a check and balance against Congress, right? Our government is built upon checks and balances. And the idea of all of those checks and balances is that any one piece of the government can stop a bad law, right? The legislature is bicameral. So if the House passes something that the Senate doesn't like, then the Senate cannot pass it. If the Senate passes something that the House doesn't like, then the House cannot pass it. If both of them pass it and the president doesn't like it, he cannot sign it. He can veto it. He can do whatever he so chooses in that regard. And so long as the president isn't creating new laws that are enforced on the public and is not just basically choosing not to enforce laws, I do believe that that's within his purview to do so. And the check and balance on that, of course, is that the president has the ability to ignore the or not ignore, but to he has the prerogative to not enforce certain laws. Congress has then the prerogative to impeach him if they feel that he is doing the wrong thing. And that is the check and balance that we have on the system right now. So I just – and, of course, obviously I didn't mention the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court also has the ability to repeal laws based on the Constitution. So there are checks and balances built into the system, and they are the things that – are supposed to protect us from laws that are onerous or otherwise violate our rights. The idea is it is supposed to be a government that has trouble getting new laws passed. That is the point of it. And I see we have a caller in the queue here. I'm going to bring him on now. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Ken. It's Robert Perry.
Hey, Rob. How you doing?
Fine. Yourself, man?
I'm doing real good. How can I help you, sir?
Well, something I was wondering about on the delays of the Obamacare mandates, and I just literally don't know this and thought you might, but to me it's a concern. If you're a business or an individual who's impacted by a delay in the mandate, a delay in enforcement, in my mind, would not be the same as a waiver. So it leaves me wondering, if you take advantage of the delay in enforcement and then another administration comes along and wants to hold your feet to the fire of what was the law at the time, are they going to be able to do so?
That's a really good question. I would say that there'd probably be a legitimate ex post facto thing there that, you know, the government did say, you know, the government was the one that gave the right to do so. But you're correct. It does create that question. And more to the point, all these delays just cause giant question marks in the minds of business owners everywhere. I talk to a lot of small business owners. Small business owners are very concerned about the impact of this law and what it does to their business. And the longer it's delayed, the longer these question marks linger. And many business owners that I've talked to have specifically held off hiring or expanding their business until this thing kicks in because they don't know what the effect is going to be. And so
right.
There are certainly ramifications in general to holding this thing off. But, that is an interesting point. If the next administration says you weren't complying with this in 2014 and the law said 2014, does the fact the president said, well, we're not going to really pay attention to this until 2016 matter? I don't know. That would be an interesting legal issue. Dave, did you have some thoughts on that?
It kicks the responsibility can right down the road, and my personal opinion is that's exactly why it was done. It's being put off, and because the current administration has enough heat as it is without suffering from the ramifications of dealing with what they pushed through. They can let somebody else deal with it.
Right. Of course, we have the same problem with – I'm sorry, what was that, Ken?
No, go ahead, Rob.
I was going to say, of course, you have the same problem with the prospects of building any infrastructure relating to marijuana. How much do you want to invest? How much infrastructure do you want to build based on the fact that the federal government isn't stepping in and trying to enforce any federal laws right now in this administration.
That's a very good point, actually. You know, the Colorado situation, where Colorado has legalized marijuana completely, has led to some very interesting things. And I've been following Colorado because I think it may serve as a roadmap as to what would actually happen if it were legalized everywhere.
Right.
And there are some interesting effects. I mean, there's actually – I just read a story online yesterday or today about how all these new jobs are being created because of the pot market, and that there was actually a job fair of some sort for all the pot businesses. I thought that was kind of interesting. And then, you know, there are some still issues where banks, traditional banks, don't want to deal with those that are involved in the drug trade at all, and there are banking regulations specifically prohibiting it. So a lot of these guys are carrying around giant sacks of cash. And, you know, when they pay their taxes, they're bringing in giant sacks of cash because it's the only way they can pay their taxes. No bank will take the deposits. And there's certainly nothing that would have, or nothing that says that 2 years from now, a new president gets in and he just cracks down and destroys the whole thing and arrests a whole bunch of people and whatever. There's certainly nothing that gives them that protection.
Right. Now, is Kentucky going to be a state full of farmers asking whether or not they should invest in farm equipment related to hemp in a few years on these same types of concerns?
Well, I believe that Thomas Massey successfully snuck through industrial hemp in the farm bill this year. I think, if I understand correctly, we are good to go on at least phase one of hemp, Kentucky. Yeah, so Thomas Massey took a major beating because he voted for the farm bill, and everybody was like, what in the world are you doing voting for the farm bill? That's crazy. But, you know, in typical political ways, right, he had a trade. And so he traded his vote to get industrial hemp in. And, in fact, the farm bill actually did cut things back 1%, which he campaigned on the penny plan, which is cut back 1% per year. So it matched his platform, and he got industrial hemp. So that's why he voted for the farm bill, and that's why we, in theory, are going to be able to go forward now. I believe there are six test projects or startup projects for industrial hemp that are being run throughout the state. They're just getting started.
I don't even understand that. What are they testing?
That's a really good question. It sounds like, so I talked to Katie, who's been on the show before, about industrial hemp, and it might be time to bring her back on to catch everybody up. But essentially, the pilot projects are importing hemp seed into Kentucky and testing what types of hemp grow better in what parts of the state. And my understanding is that Kentucky is not necessarily going to be growing hemp for the sake of growing hemp, but to create more seed, more hemp seed for the other states. Apparently that's a huge cash crop for farmers. I'm not tied into farming close enough to really know that, but it sounds about right. And apparently Kentucky's known for that we're not really growing stuff for market here, but we're growing things to grow seeds where other people then plant those seeds and take those products to market.
Well, that's lovely, but we need the state to do it because why?
Yeah, I don't know. I think part of it is that the law actually does state that it has to be run and administered in some way that makes sure that THC doesn't end up in the hands of minors, there are some restrictions on the law that did get passed. And so I think that having the state involved guarantees that those things happen. Now, obviously, you and I, based on your questioning, agree the state really shouldn't have a say in it at all anyway, and the farmer should just be let loose and let the market decide it all. But unfortunately, right now, that's the situation we're in. Hopefully, things will continue to move in the right direction, and hopefully we'll get to a point where it's not even necessary to go get the license to grow hemp.
I think it's because the Commonwealth of Kentucky found that they threw so much money at education, and that worked out so well for them, they figured they'd just throw some more money at it.
Brilliant observation.
So we've got about a minute and a half left in the show. Rob, you got anything else?
No, I was just going to say, please do bring Katie back on. I don't know Katie, but if Katie can inform us as to what's going on with hemp, that'd be great.
Katie is wonderful. Thank you, Rob. I'm going to put you on hold here. Katie's wonderful. We'll see if we can get her to come back on. She's been involved with the Industrial Hemp Museum and also previously served through the end of last year on the Industrial Hemp Commission for the state. So Katie has a lot of knowledge on what's going on with hemp in Kentucky, and I'll see if I can get her on here in the near future. Dave, you have any final thoughts for the last minute?
I'm good. I'm just I'm thinking about that. Rob's got me thinking about the money that my state's spending now.
Now, we can hit that on yet another show in the future. You know, the budget bill is being debated right now in Frankfurt, so we'll see if we can get some analysis on the budget bill and crank through all that and see what shenanigans and sillinesses are in that this time around. But other than that, folks, I think that's a wrap. I thank you all for tuning in. If you're listening on the podcast, please tune in again, but we'd like to hear you live. If you'd like to join the show later on in the future live, we enjoy the calls. Folks, thanks again for tuning in. This has been another edition of Liberty Unbridled on the MyView Matters Radio Network. See you next week.